Welcome to STEM Spots, a weekly science review produced in cooperation with the Missouri State University Department of Physics, Astronomy, and Materials Science.
Hi, this is Dave Cornielsen, and you are listening to the webcast edition of STEM Spots. With me in the studio via Skype is Dr. Jane Belknap, who is a senior research scientist for the U.S. Geological Survey in Moab, Utah. Thanks again for stopping by, Jane.
Sure.
Jane, I've done some reading, and some friends of mine talked to me about the work you did, and I hadn't really thought about what you worked on, which is biological crust. So the first thing to get out of the way is, exactly what in the world is that?
So biological soil crust, or biocrust as we commonly call them, is a community of soil surface-dwelling organisms. It's made up of mosses and lichens, which lichens are a combination between cyanobacteria and green algae and a fungi, but grow on the top of the surface, or the microscopic cyanobacteria, green algae, and fungi, all of which play very important roles in the ecosystems where they occur.
Now, those are important, I'm sure, otherwise you wouldn't be studying them except for just a purely academic interest. So what is their link in general to the ecological system in which they reside?
So biological soil crusts are absolutely critical in many ecosystems, and basically, they're most important for soil stability in that they hold soils together. They have little filaments and things that go throughout the soil particles, linking them together, and they keep the soils from eroding. And that erosion could be water erosion or it can be wind erosion. Especially in areas where there's not a lot of vegetation, dust can be a super major issue, both human health and in terms of water resources, all sorts of things. So they are critical for that. But they're also important for fertility. Many soils have very low nutrient levels, and these guys actually contribute nutrients to the soil, making it a better environment for vascular plants to grow.
So one of the things we talked about earlier was this idea is whether they're ubiquitous. And so in drier areas, such as the Colorado Plateau, Arizona, with which I'm very familiar because I lived there for many years, this kind of stuff is just so easily observable, relatively speaking. And is it that it always tries to be somewhere, but sometimes it's outcompeted? So in other words, it's around here in Missouri too, I'm sure, but just less easily observable. So how does that work? Wherever it gets relatively dry, this stuff moves in and does its job? Is that what's going on?
Actually, it's wherever there isn't a lot of plant cover.
Okay.
So that can be in places where it rains a lot. Maybe so you have the pine barrens where the soils are very infertile. These guys are a very dominant part of the community there. Or it can be where you have a tree fall or you have vegetation removed. And they'll come in right away and stabilize those surfaces and start contributing to soil fertility. They're really the first Johnny on the spot. Glaciers, when they retreat, these guys are what show up first and basically help set the stage so that the vascular plants can grow.
Would that be true because, so I don't know their biology very much, would that be true because like there's spores of these things in the air all the time and they land and do their job wherever they need to do their job? Is that what goes
on? Exactly. And not only that, but there's also if there's any living organisms nearby, they can also fall or roll in or wash in. But really, the initial stages, it's mostly air. There's plenty of material flying around in the air, and they get deposited on places where the soil is bare.
So you, of course, have established already that these are important. They're a part of a lot of pretty much all ecological systems at some level. And so you're interested in actually studying these. I know you've done a lot of research over a wide array of areas. So if you want to go out in the field and look at this, what kinds of projects might you do? I know we talked briefly about this before, but expand a little. What kinds of different ways can you study what goes on with these biocrusts?
Sure. So we've been looking at the impacts of disturbance. Disturbance can be wide. It can be a physical disturbance like a car or footprints or cattle grazing. It can be climate disturbance. If it gets too hot or it doesn't rain as much or it rains a lot more at a different time of year, all sorts of things can affect these crusts, the composition of what species are there and what proportion or their actual function. How well can they stabilize surfaces or contribute nutrients? So we've been looking at different things. We've been finding that certainly they're very vulnerable to being smashed, whether it be by cars or people or hooves or whatever. But also, surprisingly, if temperatures get too hot, they will die. And it takes a while. They're very tough little guys. But after about 5 to 8 years with we increased temperatures by about 6 degrees Fahrenheit, we saw that they started to die off. So then we said, well, gee, what's going to happen? You know, how do, will they recover if the temperatures go down or if the disturbance stops? So we also have experiments where we've released all of these from any sort of disturbance and watched how quickly they will recover. Quickly is a bad word because they recover very, very slowly. And so we've also been looking at ways that we could enhance that recovery. We've been growing them in the greenhouse, growing them in the lab, and then putting that material out with the idea that if we can just get the first colonizers there, then they will naturally spread and really hasten that sorts of colonization of those surfaces. And it's working. It's really wonderful. If you can get material out to just jumpstart that recovery, it will recover much more quickly than if you just leave it to recover on its own.
Now, on some topics out west, of course, when people are trying to do biological restoration of various types, they run into opposition from other groups that might be stakeholders in the areas. My guess is on the kinds of work that you're interested in, other people want to partner with you or are interested in trying to move this stuff forward. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. Land managers, whether they be private or state or federal, all know the importance of soil stability and soil fertility. So everybody's pretty much unified in trying to get these guys at the state they should be at the kind of cover that they should, and as functioning as healthfully as possible.
So when you talk about doing some growth and then reintroducing in certain areas, is that just right now on your own plots of land, or are you going to actually go to ranches that are underfoot, so to speak, under hoof, and or other kinds of areas, and try to do this as a pilot or something like that? What kinds of things are going on?
Well, we actually mostly have been working with Department of Defense lands because they are very concerned about dust production off of their lands because that has huge impacts on downwind neighbors. And they've funded most of this so far. But we've also taken the results of what we've done on their lands and gone with private ranchers, the Bureau of Land Management, and National Park Service lands.
Very interesting. I never would have thought of the Department of Defense. That's interesting. So
they have actually been our main funders for many years. And
did they come to you, or did you go to them?
They came to me because they had big dust problems, and they knew that these guys were important in stabilizing surfaces, and so they asked if we could work together and try to figure out how to keep enough of them present that the dust wouldn't be an issue.
Well, that's very interesting. I hadn't thought of that. So when you let's talk a little bit more about that. So some of these projects, what kind of time frames are you in on these? Do you move on? In other words, when you do something like this, do you get it to this particular level? I'm interested in your own work. Do you say, okay, now I'll hand this off to somebody else who would then go on their way to actually initiate things like this, and I'll move on to another project? Or do you stay with something like this through implementation kind of phase?
Well, so all of the above. I've been working with this particular issue for almost 30 years, so I guess I haven't left it. On a specific project, all of the answers. You know, sometimes it's really a difficult problem, and so I stay engaged the whole way along. And other times, it's the solution's pretty obvious. I hand the materials, and I can walk away. So, and then I plug back in just to make sure everything's doing okay. But it's just really depends on the circumstance.
Now, so we talked a little bit about where you might find these crusts, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. But since you go other places, where are some of the interesting places, let's say, where you've seen some field work? I'm thinking Antarctica, maybe. Have you ever been to any place? You know, what kinds of places
I go there every year.
Well, there you go. So talk about some odd places that you've studied biocrusts.
Well, I think the most surprising places actually was Alaska. Now, you'd think, oh, well, that's not unusual, but if you go to ash flows, which are very unstable surfaces and very hard to get anything to grow on, there they are doing their job. It's pretty awesome. Fronts of glaciers, when glaciers retreat, you have just rocks, and it's not until the lichens and the mosses and the cyanobacteria move in and help stabilize what little soil is there, contribute nutrients to them, that you get plants growing. So they're a very, very critical part of new land being colonized. Lava flows, same thing, just like a retreating glacier.
Well, that means
these guys will be the first things in.
So that would mean they would play a role in the growth of islands.
Yes.
Because, I mean, you know, Hawaii, as Hawaii's found out again just recently, they are part of an island making a volcanic ridge or whatever it is. And so I've always wondered about that because, of course, people think, well, gee, Hawaii's this verdant place. But in fact, it was very rocky and then somehow the soil got there. So this would be a first step in the growth of a soil system over even that kind of a situation?
Yep. You just look at the Galapagos, very similar. You know, they've been young volcanic islands that are slowly being collecting soil, or the soil's being stabilized by biocrust, and then the plants can get in. The same thing's going to happen with Hawaii. It's going to take a long time, but that's what's going to happen. So, you know, those are really unique, and Iceland was really fun. There's just tons of biocrust all over the island of Iceland, and so that's somewhere you might think, oh, it rains so much that they wouldn't be there, but they are a very important part of that system as well.
This is where Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and then we were in Africa where you've got all these animals, like in Kenya and Tanzania, you know, you've got these huge herds of wildebeest, a million wildebeest migrating back and forth every year. You actually have biocrust there too. They're just a different species than we normally encounter, and they're very resistant to hooves and being trampled.
That makes sense.
They're everywhere.
This is the place. This is the place where an experimental condensed matter physicist makes a complaint about how nice your job is, as opposed to me going to my basement lab. So this is science envy here.
I have been so spoiled, and I go to Antarctica every year, and that's extra fun.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Just out of curiosity, on a related topic, because I'm always fascinated about this, what kind of people are going into this? So, for example, in physics, we've had physics, engineering, and computer science has always struggled at some level with the incorporation of women. You know, we've worked at that and worked at that. In your area, do you see new people coming up? Is it a diverse group of people coming up? Are people interested in this? Where might they come from? Are they going to come from geography departments or biology departments? Where would you see them?
Well, this is the most exciting part of all. So there was a tiny handful of us working on these guys for years and years and years, and now it's just exploded. And it's people coming mostly from biology, but every imaginable country. We have a BioCrust conference every 3 years, international, and it's astonishing. There's equal women, probably, and they're from every continent. And it's just captured so many people's attention. I mean, I literally 20 years ago couldn't have talked for more than 10 minutes about these guys because we didn't know enough, and now I could talk all day. And so there's been an absolute explosion of interest, and there is no characterization because people are flooding in from everywhere. It's super cool.
Yeah, that must be nice. I envy you once again. Thank you so much for making me feel bad. But anyway, this is fascinating stuff. I know that people can see the connection to actually to the import on their own lives. I really appreciate you stopping in and talking to me today. Thanks so much, Jane.
Sure.
Once again, this is Dave Cornelison for the webcast version of STEM Spots, signing off.
STEM Spots is available online at ksmu.org.